Hello and welcome to Android Developers Backstage. This is Chad Haas from the UI Toolkit team, joined by...
Dan Sandler from the Android System UI.
You said that as if, of course.
Of course.
Obviously, this is Dan Sandler.
No, I'm you said I had to like project at the mic, and it's like all the way across the table.
Okay. And today, so Dan is playing the part of knowledgeable co-host.
Since definitely an understudy.
Tor is not here in the Cambridge office, but in the Cambridge office, we have the Firebase... Crash Analytics team. Oh, did I say that wrong?
All right.
I got nothing here.
Just okay. Crashlytics team.
Crashlytics. Oh, yeah. I see what you did. You kind of removed the indefinite article.
Yeah, right. The French call it a valise, portable briefcase.
Elysion.
That's right.
Yes. Oui. Okay. Okay. So the French Crashlytics team.
That's us.
All right. And was that Firebase Crashlytics?
Crashlytics. You can just say Crashlytics.
Crashlytics, we'll because it was Crashlytics on your own.
Correct.
And then you acquired the Firebase name, as all good products do.
That's true.
All right.
All consuming.
Yes, okay. Tell us about it. What is it? What were you doing? How did you get here? Give us the backstory.
All right, we'll get our Wayback Machine.
Yeah.
Why don't we actually find out who's in the room here?
Yeah. Okay.
This is Andrea Falcone. I'm a software engineer on the Crashlytics team.
And I'm Matt Willis, and I'm also a software engineer on the Crashlytics team working on Android.
Excellent. So. Android. So we got the right... Okay.
Yeah.
I was afraid we were talking on the wrong platform, people, but yeah, as long as we're talking about Android.
Down the street. Okay. So for those of you that haven't been to the Cambridge office, it's great because unlike Mountain View, where there's essentially a zip code dedicated to Google, we've got all the tech companies all buttoned up right against each other here in Lower Kendall. It's really nice.
Yeah.
It's a great place to work.
I bet you watch what you say in the cafe a lot more here.
Oh, don't you? I'm sorry. I got a little HR. Give me just a second here.
It's getting awkward.
Okay. So that's who you are. Yep. So what do you work on? What is Crashlytics?
Perfect. Crashlytics is a crash reporter for mobile apps, Android and for iOS. And we as a team have been working on the product for 6 years.
Wow.
And we're on our second acquisition. Some of you may have remember us from when we were working at Twitter on a product called Fabric. Mm-hmm. Crashlytics was the foundation of Fabric. So we started just as crash reporting. We wanted to build a tool that made mobile app developers better, made them better at their job, made their apps better. And so we started building crash reporting. When I joined the team, we were 9 people working out of a 1-bedroom apartment here in Kendall Square.
Ooh, cozy.
Oh, it was amazing. It was really amazing. And in 2013, we were acquired by Twitter. And we went there, we built Fabric. That was a suite of mobile developer tools harnessed for the power of Crashlytics, which was the distribution mechanism. A plugin, this is before Gradle and before CocoaPods, a Mac app and a plugin.
CocoaPods, is she making that up? That's just like a serial.
Oh, can she tell us what that is for those of us who...
Yeah. CocoaPods, we're going to talk about iOS stuff just for a minute.
Yeah.
CocoaPods is a tool similar to Gradle and allows for seamless dependency resolution. There was a time, we may not remember it, a time before dependencies were easily resolved in your IDE, in your command line. You'd be dragging them all over the place, dropping them.
Like
in
what
the wrong
version
place,
of this wait, jar do you have? Which version of this SO? Or you like link another Git project into your Git? Or
didn't Makefile solve this?
Okay. All right. So before those tools were commonly used for mobile app development, you have to get a library from somewhere and just drop that jar file in Eclipse and and hope for the best.
Yeah.
And so we were harnessed for our distribution tooling as well as our amazing crash reporting. And built the platform that allowed other SDKs to be distributed through it.
Other SDKs for like
mobile
developer metrics or
yeah.
specifically or just any kind of like, oh yeah, I need to integrate a payment processor. I need to integrate a, you know, an image caching thing, just like kind of whatever.
The latter actually.
Okay. Yeah.
Wait, so the thing that you were most famous for was just like a byproduct. What they actually wanted was your infrastructure for distributing libraries in general.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'd say it was a little bit of both.
Yeah. Okay. And so while at Twitter, Fabric became a platform where people could get Twitter SDKs and the crash reporting SDK and an analytics SDK and a payment processing SDK and through drag and drop or like one click will modify your build doc Gradle and do it all for you.
In 140 characters.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Basically.
And that was Fabric. And until January, Matt and I worked on Fabric at Twitter. Actually, just down the street.
Just down the street.
As previously mentioned, all the tech companies in Cambridge are snuggled up against each other. So.
In that same one-bedroom apartment.
That's what happens when tech companies stop being play.
So we put our stuff in a box and we walked a few blocks down the road. And now we're here at Google.
We love to have you. I mean, it was great. Great infusion in our office. We've acquired a few companies since we've been out here, and because this is a smaller office, every one of those is like a noticeable like influx of like fresh faces and energy and, you know,
sweet signage and things and
culture.
Right? Actually, if I may go off on a side tangent, I wondered what I was going to do with all my Twitter t-shirts. And then I got here and I realized everyone here wears t-shirts from other companies. So
absolutely.
I thought, okay.
Yeah. Well, it's your alma mater in a sense.
Yeah,
like, nobody's
basically.
Like, oh, yeah, no, put that Duke shirt away. Right?
Yeah.
you're done with that now. Although, like elementary school t-shirts, I would maybe stay away from those.
Mm.
There is.
Does it still fit
So, so when you joined, so what exactly was spun out of Twitter or into Google or however that worked? Was it the entire Fabric effort? Was it specifically the Crashlytics part?
Great question.
Thank you. I mean, I'm going to keep score here.
A-plus questions from Jeff. All of Fabric was spun out.
Sorry, for those that can't see, Chet has now made a scoreboard, Dan versus Chet.
He's quite literally keeping score.
Quite literally keeping score.
It is something that may or may
Chet,
not have happened in Tor podcast in the past.
Oh, really?
It did start with a Jeff Sharkey episode where he's really good about saying, that is a great question.
That's right. I think that's one of the podcast episodes I listened to.
Yeah, and you know, we were keeping score in the background, and Tor usually wins, actually. So. Mm-hmm. That's why I wrote it.
I'm rooting for you, Dan.
Thanks.
All of the Fabric team came over, and we're still running the Fabric product and brand. We had a product called Digits, which was a phone-based authentication, and that has rolled into Firebase Phone Auth. So become part of Firebase, released a new SDK that allows developers to... have their end users authenticate via SMS.
Oh, okay, so it's a two-factor solution
yep.
that you don't have to set up yourself. And okay,
yeah.
I see. So I was thinking, wait, how does that combine with the OAuth stuff? But the OAuth is specifically about accounts. Is about Google accounts specifically?
No, that's a standard.
It's just an account, but this
so
is a completely
to...
different mechanism.
Yep.
Right. Digits was sort of the original iteration of phone number-based identity management, and that's kind of the same area that Firebase Phone Auth is looking to do, so we rolled Digits right into that. It was a perfect fit.
That's great.
Okay.
And now we're working on other ways to bring the best parts of Fabric into Firebase. And so going forward, Crashlytics will become the default crash reporter for Firebase, taking over for Firebase Crash Reporting.
Yeah, so there was that thing that existed already. There was a team working on that I assume it was like release product. This is not my space, obviously. And then now all of a sudden we have duplication. So do we have that team and your team like working together on the single solution, or is it just, you know, you do an evaluation, you go with one?
We're working with that team sort of to get lessons learned and figure out best practices, how to operate in Firebase.
Yep.
But it's really going to be the Crashlytics brand and product that existing Crashlytics customers are familiar with.
Yep.
So we're gonna bring what we think is the best crash reporter. Inside of Firebase.
So if you're an Android developer and you're just like, you know, new to the world, like you looked at the SDK, you installed it, you fired up Android Studio, you did Hello World, you signed a binary, you uploaded it to the Play Store, it gets put up there. Today, in terms of crashes, you don't see a lot, right? You don't get a ton of detail.
Yeah,
is that
a little bit of information through Google Play Developer Console.
Right. So that's like the bare minimum.
The
you'll find out.
Right.
This many crashes of that particular like etiology, but you don't get, you know, any additional debugging information. You don't understand much about the context, things like that. So yeah. tell me like what the I assume it's a huge gulf between that and the Crashlytics experience for a developer.
Yeah. One of the things we think is the most amazing about Crashlytics is that it's real time. So you can literally pick up your phone, crash it. In the time you turn and look at your dashboard, you're going to see the number of crashes or new issues, if it's a brand new thing, go up. You'll be alerted about it.
God, I'm going to write a crashy app just so I can see that number go up. That sounds awesome.
You wouldn't be the first.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be his first.
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Some of the other things that we think are amazing are the ability to log non-fatal exceptions.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you've got try and catch all throughout your app when you're like, this shouldn't happen, but I don't know what to do when it does. I'll just keep on going.
Right.
And it's a way to log that has happened, send some context, and allow you to aggregate that and be like, wow, everyone on this type of device or on this OS is running into this exception and I've handled it. So their experience isn't a crashed app, but it's probably not the best experience that end user could have.
That's phenomenal, because otherwise you have to choose between like sweeping it under the rug and having a good experience, or getting that data that would allow you to make it a better experience for everybody in the long term. So you can have both.
Yep.
So I'm curious, if the reporting is real time, there's got to be a trade-off between like getting the information you want as a developer and bogging down the user's A, experience, and B, bandwidth,
mm-hmm.
with a lot of information that is constantly going back to the servers, right?
Yeah, so for crash reporting on its own, the only information that's really going back to the servers is the crash, the end result. And that's hopefully not the majority of your
right.
the sessions of your
yeah.
running app. You know, if you're doing good, you're targeting 99.9% crash-free, so that 0.1% of your users are experiencing a crashed session.
And that, so it's just a Boolean saying somebody crashed?
There is some additional information that goes back to the server. We're going to send the whole stack of all the stack frames, all the running threads,
okay.
all of that information. And we do compress that.
So typical size is?
A few kilobytes.
Okay.
Pretty
yeah.
small. There's a trade-off between sending information and finding out nothing,
right.
but you know, be biased to giving the user useful information.
In your case, the user,
the developer.
Being
right.
the
developer,
yeah.
your user, your customer, but
yes.
the developer.
Yeah.
Is that the kind of thing that you can deploy or undeploy without a binary push? So you can say, you know, this cohort of users, I want to get additional debug, you know, stacks from them, but for these, not just one crashes?
That's actually something we've discussed as far as potentially targeting cohorts, but it's not something we've ever actually
okay.
implemented.
Yeah, you can turn off a version.
Okay, yeah,
so,
right. So you could push like a beta version. That.
Yeah, or I'm so tired of hearing about crashes from that version, I know it was terrible, I'm just going to stop listening.
That's true.
Oh, I see. Yep, got it. We're full up, thanks.
Yeah.
We know that one's
yeah.
bad.
Okay.
Also, if you... if you have a crash that's happening over and over again and you just don't care, you can go into the UI and lock it, and close it and lock it. And then if it comes in, we just don't show you anymore because you don't care.
Is there a legit use case for that besides developer negligence?
Yeah, actually. And so this is an interesting thing and might segue well into one of our new features. But there are a number of crashes that happen that are based on things that the developer can't do anything about, like you know, bugs in Android, or you know, few and
not,
far between.
Not a thing.
Not a.
No.
But you know, some platform issue or some particular device manufacturer issue that has a weird build of Android or something mm-hmm. causing problems. And so, in that case, those might be coming in. You might go, I can't do anything about this. I just have to wait for the next, you know, platform update or whatever. And then you would just close that one out and lock it.
Wait. So the user is closing this out?
The developer. The user of Crashlytics.
Okay. Yeah.
Again, you got to put yourself in the shoes of people whose customer is a developer in a way that you ought
I've
to be since you made the API.
So the reason I was asking is because the user, the actual user of the phone, still ends up sending information up to the server but gets dropped on the floor. Like, it seems like there is a world in which the servers could let the user's application or the user's device know we don't need this anymore so that it no longer goes up.
Yeah, we do have our concept of settings, which is a ping that the SDK occasionally makes when it starts up to get information about, am I on or am I off?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yep. And yeah. So we can stop it on the device so it's not sending useless information.
Yeah. Okay.
So is that
I stopped you in the middle.
Oh, no, nice. I was just gonna talk a little bit about trash, you know,
it's not really.
Okay. You know, talking about those issues that you can't really do much about or don't know what's causing them. We recently released a feature called Crash Insights, where we're trying to really go beyond just, you know, telling you what happened with your app or what crashed, and sort of give you some idea of how to fix it. So we've got a lot of information about what's going on in the ecosystem, right? And so we're able to say, hey, a particular crash, whether it be like platform crash or like, again, a particular device build or something like that, we can see that that's affecting multiple users. And so, and users in this case being organizations making an Android app.
So like it's cross-cutting across different developers, different apps.
That's right.
Okay. So there's something else going on that's not intrinsic to the app or is being triggered by a common practice.
Yep. And so we've started building out this feature called Crash Insights. We released it at I/O this year. What it basically enables you to do is for these crashes that we can tell, hey, this is happening to a lot of people, we can give you sort of more insight into what may be going on. So we have a number of them that are, you know, just error API misuse.
Yeah. You're bad. You should feel bad. You're using this SDK or this library poorly.
Mm-hmm. Like one that I can think of that we did recently was like your fragments got out of sync with your activities and something blew up somewhere with your fragment transactions. That happens to a lot of apps. And we're able to say, oh, you know, here's how to solve that. Like there's a bunch of articles online. You can go take a look at how to make that better.
So it's essentially Firebase Clippy. Is that right?
No. It's Crash Insights Overflow, right? Like it saves you the trouble of having to like search the internet for the same stack trace and like, oh, yes, this is a thing.
I mean, that's basically the core idea.
Yeah.
Is, you know, we're able to tell, hey, you know, this is happening to a lot of people. We already know what's causing it. Mm-hmm. We might as well just tell everybody what the deal is.
Crashlytics is seeing thousands of crashes a second. And we can say, man, this particular library has this problem. Let's give those folks a link to an article where they can fix it.
Yeah.
Is that something that like exists as a general consumption dashboard, or do you have to be a Crashlytics customer, a developer that has Crashlytics, and you will get information about crashes pertinent specifically to your binaries?
Specific to you.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. I'm just kind of wondering about like the global weather map of like crashing issues. I'm looking at this again from a platform developer perspective, which I recognize is not who your customer is, but I'm hearing this and thinking, oh gosh, well that would be a really interesting way. Certainly, if those crashes are the result of an interaction between a particular combination of packages installed on the device and a particular ROM from a particular OEM and a particular piece of hardware and a particular carrier, may not be something we can do anything about, but we also, you know, are in communication with all those OEMs and all those carriers, and we can say, hey, perhaps you've noticed this in your own consumer operations division, like we see this too, and you might be interested in it.
Yeah, I mean, that's totally a use case we've thought about. Also, you know, sometimes platform bugs do happen.
Oh yeah, and I've authored many of them myself. Yeah. I'm very proud.
Papa. I think we should be walking upstairs to Dan's desk and just give me a peek at the screen and
yeah.
Show him where the problems are.
That's right.
But a few different insights we actually have refer back to bug reports in the Android bug tracker.
Which we've now moved into the new Google Cloud, the issue tracker, which means that things, bug reports that get filed by the public are actually in the same database that we use for our everyday work, which was never true before, right? So the b.android.com, the old bug tracker, it was great in 2008 when there were like three people interested in Android and three people working on it, but it quickly became a place that was very, very low signal to noise. There were some really, really good bugs, well-debugged things that were hiding in there. But it was an old piece of technology and we were working on this new thing. So now that we've got Issue Tracker and it is all, you know, inside and out, like I really am confident that this is going to result in better intel for us as we develop the next version of the platform.
Yeah, and So like I say, we have some insights that already link out to the issue tracker, closed bugs and stuff, so that the developer can see a crash come in and they go, what is this? And then see that it's on a particular version of Android and it's already been fixed and they don't need to do anything about it. And then they can just close that out and ignore it and move on to more important things. But yeah, definitely as kind of in our minds is like this idea of as we see things come in, we could potentially be like an early warning system for platform issues or whatever, and help feed into that feedback loop so that, you know, to make the whole platform better.
That's great.
Is this information like stack frames at the native level as well?
Yes, although it's it's a...
Everything gets harder when you move to native.
Yeah, native is a whole other level. But yeah, we do have a native development kit, NDK, solution as well.
Okay, so it's
a
separate product.
Yeah. Okay. That's why I sort of paused, because like, to say it's a separate product entirely is a bit of a misnomer, but it is another kit, what we call kits, under the Fabric umbrella. So if you're using Crashlytics, we have a Crashlytics NDK kit as well that sort of comes alongside it and catches native crashes.
Okay. And just be clear, like, is this a product that we sell? Is this free service that we provide?
This product sells itself.
Well, I'm a little confused in the Firebase area because I know that there are like for sale services and there are also things that people just get as part of, you know, signing up for.
Yeah, so Crashlytics in particular is a free service.
Okay.
And was a free service and will remain a free service as far as I know.
Okay.
But as is quite a bit of the Firebase product, where Firebase is made up of a number of different solutions that you can integrate into your app.
I mean, there's probably like different tiers of those different products where all of a sudden you're paying money for.
Yeah, each of them has different pricing models and whatever.
But just the fact that it says Firebase doesn't mean this is a product that we sell. It's just this is like a suite of products using Google services. Okay, just to be clear. So I didn't want to like stop the podcast halfway through. What? We're charging money? No.
Wait, we're charging money for the podcast?
Those commercials we were talking about.
It's going to be huge.
Oh, yeah. Chet, you want to talk about something you like?
Brought to you from our sponsor, Firebase. let's see. So what was I going to ask about? I was going to ask about... So I'm kind of curious about the history of Crashlytics overall. So I assume that this was actually something people paid for when you were on your own in a small one-bedroom apartment, right? Because otherwise, how could you afford to be in that really fancy place?
Just before our acquisition, we got a check from our first customer.
Yay!
So
I'm imagining that scene in Ghostbusters.
We got one. Yeah, it was a real paper check. But the goal of Crashlytics has always been to have that free tier. We want people to make better apps, and so we had two enterprise customers where they could pay for more storage or higher, better security, or some there were some enterprise
or support from. Your organization, I mean, like, they could pay for, you know...
Yeah, there were
detailed support.
Yeah, there were things they could pay for. But like I said, we received one just before the acquisition.
Right. So thank you for the check. Tomorrow will be free.
Okay.
That was all. That was that whole thread. I was just curious where it came from. Because, like, a lot of things will do that. Like, you start out as a pay service, but it actually makes more sense for these companies to say, we need to provide this thing, and... the money that, you know, companies of this size are going to make out of this are not as important as the services that we can provide for the platform developers, right?
Right, which in turn makes better apps, makes a better platform, is good for everyone.
Everybody wins. Yep.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, so tell me more about the features that, I don't know, that developers get on their dashboards. Like, they get the stack trace, they get the insights.
I mean, I don't know if you know, but we have... dozens of listeners to this podcast. So what do you want those developers to know about this product that they don't already know?
Latest features, maybe?
Yeah, Crash Insights was a big thing.
Okay,
Insights was the big new thing.
All right.
Put that in the show notes.
it's right here. I made a note right there.
Yeah.
I think one thing that Crashlytics customers, developers who are customers, users of Crashlytics, just so we're clear, probably have noticed is that we try to make the experience magical. We
Here's
get
that
both
clippy thing again.
Mm. We get both praised and dinged for things like code injection. So we built an Android Studio plugin that you know, hangs out in the sort of sidebar there. And when you want to add Crashlytics or through Fabric other SDKs into your app, you just click buttons. It tells you there's an update. It'll update your build.gradle. Or you know, before in the old days in the Eclipse world, it would actually download new jars and put them into your app to keep you up to date with the latest, or to give you new functionality. And we get praised for, this is so easy. It's like one click onboarding. It's amazing. And someone else will turn around in the same breath and say, get out of my code and stop, you know, stop modifying my app.
Yeah.
And so we walk this fine line of trying to make things magical and easy and low friction, but also have to cater to the special Snowflake developers with their, you know, their build.gradles don't look like anything we've ever seen before and can't inject code into them because we just, like, the parser we're using has no idea what that section is about. It doesn't make any sense to what we've seen. Or they store all of their version numbers in a separate file, and so the code that we would inject looks nothing like what they have.
There's always a fine line between magical and mystifying, right?
Yeah.
When it does something without you having to lift a finger, it hinges critically on whether that's the thing that you wanted done.
That's very true.
Yeah.
Also, if you get to the point where nobody is complaining about the thing that you're offering, then you have no engineers using your product.
Mm.
That's true. That's a really good
That's
point.
Absolutely right, yeah.
Complaints correlate with impact.
It's how you know that they're there.
Yeah.
So that is that's the interface to getting the product and updating the product. Mm-hmm. But what, there must be an API? Is there like a logging API? Like you mentioned something earlier where like, oh, in this exception, I can do the following.
Yeah.
Right? So what's the API service like?
Yeah.
Toss an exception. That's good.
Write that down.
I like Chuck.
Chuck
an exception. Chuck. Many connotations.
Nice. Chuck and Clippy. Yeah.
That seems like a log.wtf kind of situation.
Yeah, so there's the ability to log non-fatal exceptions. There's also sort of logging and key value pairs that you can add. So you can hook up all of your maybe your log.d or any of your standard developer logging, you could hook that up to Crashlytics and have that entire trace of logging be logged with the crash.
Okay.
So you pipe all of your logging through Crashlytics. You can have it also log out to Logcat.
Back to all time, or is it some like I want
to
have
there's a buff, like a buffer.
Yeah.
Like 64K or some
nobody will ever need
reasonable size buffer of
that's
ever,
exactly
nobody
right.
ever reasonable size buffer
but you also mentioned a key value store, which implies that you would also be able to say here's the current state of things.
Exactly.
That's right.
If you're if it's a game, you can log the game level or the, you know, the user's status, what screen they were on or how they got there. A lot of different
Android platform, we would think of this as Dumpsys.
Yeah.
Dumpsys Logcat.
Okay.
This is literally useful to nobody who's listening. But that's the analogy.
Is that a general comment about the podcast in general?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
So you can get that additional context. That will help you solve, you know, you see crashes come in and you're like, well, it says, you know, XYZ activity, and I go there and I click the button and I don't see the crash. I'm trying to reproduce, I'm trying to fix it, make my app better. You can use the additional features of the, you know, seeing your Logcat output. It's like, oh, thing went wrong, put it in this state, turn it upside down. Oh, that's how they got there. And I had no idea from just seeing the actual exception crash. Null pointer exception. Like, what if that line is null? There's like 10 objects at that line. Which one of them is null? And how did it even get into that state? They should never be null.
And then this is true even of, like, you know, interactive symbolic debugging, right? Knowing the current state of things is critical, but sometimes it's not the whole story. Like, how did we get here? That's why,
get here,
you know,
exactly.
You know, printf debugging is still a thing.
Yeah.
It is part of a balanced breakfast. Like, you can't just rely on it. But yeah, you need to know those state changes to be able to figure out, like, oh, that's how it, okay. Well, if that was null and so forth.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's part of the dashboard as well.
Okay, so then what's the magical part where you said you inject code? What is that code that you're injecting? Where is it injected? Like, does every method then end up having like a little header, a piece of information that is stack trace information?
Like, yeah, nothing sort of at that injection level. It's okay. The code injection is very minimal. It's
and what is it doing?
Into your build doc radle, we inject dependency, and we inject an API key into the manifest.
Oh, okay. And, so you're not injecting into the code.
We're not manipulating your whole app. It's really like very minimal code injection.
Yeah,
right.
Still wakes people up.
Right. Crashlytics is really more about your manual intervention of like putting in logs, and then when a crash happens, we'll tell you about it. So we don't inject anything. However, the neat thing with integrating into Firebase is Firebase Performance Analytics is now sort of part of the same package. Yeah. Which does some of that sort of thing and right. automatically instruments method calls and stuff to give you performance analytics. So you'll ultimately be able to get both of those sorts of things together, Crashlytics crash reporting as well as Firebase performance analytics.
So that was, I couldn't help but notice, that was a second and completely separate product placement. So does that, do we get more from the sponsorship for the, we can probably pursue this offline.
Not a sponsor, not a sponsor.
right. Yes, the performance stuff, which they also talked about at I/O, the performance for Jank stuff, as well as what memory and battery was it? I can't remember. Memory and network.
Yeah.
Okay. Crash. How do you get the information? Like, where do you plug in to get that information when it crashes so that you can upload the information?
RSCK installs an uncaught exception handler, which that's the base of all crash handling in Java.
Right.
We hang on to that. That's the very first thing that our SDK does, is install this uncaught exception handler so that we can start catching crashes immediately.
And in that case, like, crashes is narrowly defined as, is a runtime exception.
Yes.
That's right.
Is an exception that is thrown and is not caught by something else. Okay. From there, we grab the stack trace and the system information. And then part of what we're doing is handing off to any other uncaught exception handler. So if you're using other crash reporters, we'll hand off, let them handle the crash.
We call that defense in depth. You're just going to have 5 crash reporters.
That's been done.
That's been done.
And then we hand off to whatever the default exception handler was.
Ultimately it ties back to the Android platform exception handler that goes to Logcat or whatever.
And then let the process die.
Yeah, the system UI and
brings it back.
Whatever.
That's right. Yeah.
And is there a user interaction in the reporting service at all?
It's up to the developer to implement if you want to prompt your user or not to collect a crash. We find that a huge number of users would say no if you gave them the option.
Sure.
So part of your terms of service, you can decide that you as a developer are going to collect crashes and send them to Crashlytics.
Yep.
I would imagine there's a tremendous selection bias if you let people opt into reporting crashes. You will only hear about the sorts of crashes that apply to the sorts of people that are excited about reporting crashes.
That's exactly right, actually.
Yep. Earlier, you had asked about, how do we handle, not sending a huge amount of information over the air. And there's certainly some care that we take in crafting of Crashlytics and how it functions. So part of what we're doing is compressing all of that crash information into protobuf format. So it's a very tiny format that goes over the wire a lot more easily than something loaded like JSON.
Do you send it immediately? And you mentioned earlier that it's real time. Do you always send it immediately? Do you, work with GCM job scheduler to like wait for the device to be like more chill?
Question, isn't it?
I'm just saying. This question brought to you by GCM
leading
job scheduler.
The witness, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Today, we try to send it immediately at crash time. Mm-hmm. There's a small window where the process is still running, and usually that's enough time to grab everything we need and piece out.
The JVM is incredibly kind in that regard.
I see.
Yeah.
Okay. So you're really against the clock until your process dies. This is not a matter of like, I'm just going to spin up another process under my UID and do this work now separately. You're like really trying to like get out of there before the process
dies. That's right.
Yeah.
And if that doesn't work?
When you start up the app again, it'll set up.
Okay, so you cache the data.
Yeah. Write it out and then pick it up quickly. Send it out the door as fast as it can go, because we do want that real time. If somebody crashes your app and they never launch the app again because it was terrible, they hated it, we still like you to know about that crash.
Yeah.
And indeed, if those protobufs are in the, you know, dozens of kilobytes, yep. like that's, you can't even fit a single notification icon into dozens of kilobytes. Like a large icon at 64 by 64 dipped on a, you know, decent-sized display is at least 150K.
Have you thought about compressing it with a protobuf? Sounds like that's the way to go.
And we'll one up the fact that we're just using protobuf as a you know, a transport or format. We actually create those protobufs by hand because the library that we were using to generate them was huge. We pulled in this protobuf library, and it had not only the protobuf writing code, but also the reading code in it. Mm-hmm. It was something like, you know, 700K that it added to our SDK, which then gets added to someone else's app.
Right. And all you wanted was a small percentage of that function.
That's
right.
Little right. thing, and so...
So you just wanted to serialize it.
Hand-packed.
Did you know we were getting artisanal, hand-crafted, hand-churned protobufs?
Yeah. Bespoke.
Bespoke, that's right.
Yeah. Bespoke yeah, no, protobuf.
If you don't... I mean, you can get your crash reporting off the rack if you want, but here...
But I'm going to tell you exactly where to put those bytes in line mm-hmm. in order to make that thing as dense as possible.
Oh man, that's the kind of programming problem that I enjoy getting really, really sucked into, right? Because you can easily like disappear down a rabbit hole of optimization and say, "Oh man, I shaved off 2 or 3 bytes." But in the case of like, you know, thousands of crashes a second or whatever, you know, that actually matters.
Yeah. And you know, we have to be mindful of the impact that we have on every app and every device that Crashlytics is in, which is in the billions of devices that we're running on. Mm-hmm. You know, startup time of every app depends on startup time of our SDK. So I mentioned we attach this uncaught exception handler. We try to do that on the main thread incredibly quickly and then hop into the background and do all the rest of the stuff that we need to do, which is like set up a session and write out some identifiers. Like that has to happen secondarily to getting the uncaught exception handler set up quick. Mm-hmm. So we catch the crashes, yep. but also bailing onto a background thread so
and
that the app developer's app starts up
yep.
fast.
Right.
So we're always walking this line of like, what's critical, what's fast, what can be delayed, what is what must be there in order for the crash to get reported.
So yeah. This is great to hear too, because if I were looking, you know, if I were a developer looking to get information about what is crashing as opposed to the developer that I am, my app has a big sign on the front that says no refunds. It's free. I would be worried about like, I don't want to include this giant bloated library because I've seen like, you know, you just want to download an image. Here's, you know, a megabyte of code and, you know, what have you. And jank on the UI thread and so forth. But it sounds like this sounds great.
Yeah. We have a CI job that builds a test app that includes the Crashlytics SDK in it.
Mm-hmm.
And we compare it to the size of the app as it were built without the SDK and like the actual inclusion of the SDK into an app on CI every time we build it to make sure that the impact that we have on an app is minimal.
Right.
CI stands for continuous infestation.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's how the bugs get in. I never knew.
Yeah.
No, and that's great too, because then you can like watch that graph, and if the size of the added code bumps up, that's not necessarily it's not necessarily a regression, because if you added a new feature, maybe that's worth
right.
it. But if it went up and you weren't expecting it to,
yeah.
because, somebody changed something about the tool chain, and now it's not being nearly as efficient at packing this code for size, and then yeah, now you can, now you know, you can
right.
go back and fix it.
Yep.
You're in a similar situation to the framework and support library where we have the mindset internally that we are the inner loop of the applications. Like the stuff that we do has direct side effects and impact on those applications. So getting out of the way at startup time and making sure to not bloat their code on their behalf is like a pretty important thing to do.
Yeah.
So like festering on those details at our level, I think is more important than it may be for, you know, if an app wants to make the trade-off of doing this thing at startup time, that's fine. It only affects that app as opposed to affecting everybody.
That's
yeah.
exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
See how we always bring it back to us in this podcast.
Yeah.
Oh, not you.
That's right.
Wow.
Is there anything else that you would want? You've talked about, you know, common crashes, common problems. You mentioned fragments losing their stuff.
Getting out of sync with their activities.
Exactly. Thank you. That's the word I was looking for. Is there any other, there we go. any other, like, you know, hey, developers, if you had, you know, a venue, if you had the
if only there was some forum for speaking to developers.
To dozens of developers.
Right. Literal right. tens of them.
That's yeah. right.
Figures of tens of them.
That's a tough one.
No pressure.
So,
we'll
sounds
edit
like
all
the product's all done. Okay, so while you're thinking about that one, I wondered if there are any good stories about crashing during crash reporting. So, like, you're in a funny situation where a developer never wants to crash anyway, but if your reason for existing is to report the crashes and the code used to report it crashes itself, you're going to have a drop of a lot of information there.
Unless you're getting paid by the crash.
Ooh.
Yo, dog. Okay. I heard you like crashing.
That's right.
So I put some crashes in your crashes so you can crash while you crash.
It would be interesting if the developer were looking at their Crashlytics dashboard and what it reported to them was a lot of stack traces with Crashlytics in them.
Yeah. That's happened once.
Okay. I didn't know if whether you were going to come back with an honest answer or not. So it's good to see
you. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're not perfect as much as we try to be. But that has happened once, although it happened because someone was using another crash reporter that caught a crash that we had... In a rare situation that we had,
yeah.
and was like, "Hey, I'm using this other crash reporter, and it says that your SDK is crashing." And so we looked into it, and sure enough, there was this weird case where like it could get into a bad state and would crash, and so we were able to fix that.
Yay!
But we also,
if you've had this crash, you may have other crashes.
Yeah,
consult your doctor.
So it has happened. It has been known to happen. We also do. Some level of crash reporting for Crashlytics.
Sure.
We report SDK crashes to ourselves, and so we get those in the pipeline, and we're able to like divert them. And actually, we have our own dashboard that shows us any issues.
Yep.
Yeah, we can see for every incoming crash, that's thousands of crashes a second. If the crash is originating inside of our SDK,
it's coming from inside the code.
That's exactly.
But yeah. we use our own products to use our own.
That's right. We have our own Crashlytics dashboard for Crashlytics. It is true. Yeah.
We try to handle to catch as many uncaught exceptions, anything fathomable, and bail and just catch it and move on. It's better to report no crashes than it is to crash.
Right, right. And that's also an important point. Like, except for this one crash that that I talked about earlier, our SDK does its best to, if something goes wrong within our SDK, it just goes quiet. It doesn't crash your app. The goal is obviously to not crash everyone's app if we have some sort of bug. And so if there is an issue, we catch it internally to the SDK and report it to ourselves and just stop working. It's like it would be better for just not reporting crashes than it would be to crash your app, obviously.
And when you make improvements, you fix those bugs. Do people have to like relink against the new version of the client library? Are there things you can do on the server side to fix them? Is it a little of both, depending on the crash?
Oh, yeah, updates. Must be a static library, right?
Yeah, it is a static library. So, you know, we release new AARs every so often with new features or bug fixes. Obviously, it does kind of one thing and does it well, so we don't release the SDK all that much. By and large, unless we're releasing new features, we don't really need to update the SDK all that often. But the majority of features and bug fixes and stuff go on the server and on our web dashboard. And there are tons of new features coming out for that, and bug fixes on the back end.
For example, didn't require changes to the SDK.
It was data you were already collecting from the developer.
Right. Exactly.
Completely server-side. Okay.
So as long as they're updated to the version that came out at I.O., they're going to get future insights that you have using the same data
that's currently collected. That's completely right, yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
There's only so much we can plan for, in terms of, server-side functionality. We do, can build in feature switching for certain features. We still have to deploy an SDK with those updates. We're not.
Wait, is there a feature switching mechanism specifically through Crashlytics?
No, something that we've built internally, so we can turn on or off parts of...
Like conditionally compiled library.
Just turn it on and off via... I mentioned this concept of settings where the app checks in every now and then, the SDK checks in every now and then to get information from our server.
Yeah.
You tell it stop stop reporting crashes or do X, Y, or Z in a different way. But we're not sending down additional library code for to run. So.
Yeah. Well, and circling back to what we were just talking about in the previous segment, like, you know, you don't want to throw in a bunch of stuff speculatively into the client library for things that you may or may not build on the server, because that just adds to binary size.
That's exactly right. We try very, very hard to keep the binary size to a minimum, you know, keep method counts low and that sort of thing.
Yay.
Yeah.
Method names small.
Very tiny.
Lowercase.
Yeah. Ones.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, that's ProGuard's job. ProGuard does that for us. A dot B dot.
Oh, so do you reverse the stacks? The
ProGuard stacks? We, okay. Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
just so,
yes.
Yeah, definitely.
We want to talk about ProGuard?
Oh!
ProGuard!
Sure.
Yeah. Part of what you're getting with Crashlytics is the Gradle plugin that we built. We do inject a unique identifier into every build of your app.
Okay.
So every time you compile. And that unique identifier, if you're using ProGuard, is also sort of slapped on your mappings file, and you upload that mappings file to Crashlytics. We upload it via the plugin on every run. That way, every crash is tied to a specific version of the mappings file.
Yep.
So it's not the mappings file or the ProGuard deobfuscation from version 1.0. Hmm. It's from whatever you had compiled at that time.
Right, so if you make changes and don't rev a version, we still get the new mapping file for and can tie that back to that particular build, even if you've not revved the version or anything.
And as developers, there's literally nothing you have to do. We can detect from your build.gradle that you're using ProGuard, see the mappings file, and upload them.
So and critically, always... you didn't have to think about it ahead of time. It's not the case where, oh, there's this crash. Okay, we've got the obfuscated stack. I guess we have to push a version with the deobfuscated stack for that section so that we can see what's going on. Like, it's already been happening all this time. The first time you need to look at a ProGuarded stack, it's already there deobfuscated for you.
That's right.
Is that automatic, or they need to know, oh, I need to give them the mapping
automatic.
File?
That's good. Through the mm-hmm. Gradle plugin.
The plugin actually.
Yeah, the Fabric Gradle plugin does that.
So if you can figure out Gradle...
Tor's not here to punch you.
Okay.
We're nonviolent here at this podcast.
So far. Okay. Let's see. I don't know if we're missing anything. Last I think you words. Have exceeded my knowledge of Crashlytics.
And looking at the scoreboard, it's 6-1 in my favor. So good try. This
no, this was not the scoreboard anymore. This is lies.
Lies.
Oh,
I see.
Told six.
So, okay.
Yeah, just we're excited for Firebase Dev Summit, which is happening in October.
Okay.
Where?
In Amsterdam.
Okay.
On Halloween.
Wow.
Really excited. Not only to just go and hang out, but also to show off what we've been doing inside Firebase with Crashlytics. So.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
Pumped. Very cool. Yeah. All right. We'll look for you there. I won't be there, but I'll look for you to be there when I'm not.
Yeah.
So
great.
Good luck with that. All right. Thanks.
Thank you so much for coming in. It was great to meet you.
Yeah.
Very great meeting you. Thanks very much.
Thanks.